update on the Confederation line and bus service from John Manconi, our general manager, and Troy Charter and Pat Scrimger. Go ahead when you're ready, Mr. Manconi.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to ask Troy and Pat to give you the update. At the summary level, we've been delivering very, very good rail service. Things are improving. You'll see that in the update. I do want to acknowledge that this morning, though, we had some challenges, not our finest hour on two fronts. There were some delays in the launch. We had some issues in the yard on RTG's part. And while we've been doing some amazing work communicating to our customers, this morning we dropped the ball, and we're looking into what happened, and we're going to rectify things. So my apologies on that. But as I've said, overall, consistent, good, reliable service. But you're only as good as your last rush hour, as I tell everybody. So this morning was a bit choppy, and we did not communicate well to our customers. So the investments you gave us last year that, and that are in this budget have been yielding great results because we've had positive feedback. But this morning was not according to plan. So we'll close that gap. I can assure you of that. I'm going to turn it over to Troy now.
All right. Thank you, John. Good morning, Chair, Councillors, and Transit Commissioners. Like previous presentations, I'm going to start by giving you an overview of the recent performance on Line 1, followed by an update with regards to the corrective actions associated with the rectification plan items. And then, in addition, I'll also provide a bit of an update on the winter preparations that are currently underway. And then I'll turn things over to my colleague, Pat Scrimger, who will provide an update with regards to the bus and customer service updates, the Keeping You Safer campaign, Operation Mask Up, and COVID-19. Next slide, please. So with respect to the performance on Line 1, as you can see, for the month of October, we did achieve 98% of scheduled service delivered. And so far for the month of November, up to and including November 15th, we're currently right around that 99% of planned service delivered. Overall, a real positive trend that we're seeing since the beginning of August. But obviously, this is our expectation year-round, and obviously, we want to see this trend continue. Next slide, please. Again, on this graph, we continue to see for the month of October and so far into November that there's a high overall monthly reliability. Service reliability is very consistent, and we continue to see less and less variability from a day-to-day basis, translating to fewer and fewer service delays, service days falling below 97%. Correspondingly, and it makes sense, obviously, that this means that there are fewer issues impacting customers, which is very encouraging. Overall, if we were to apply a trend line to this, you continue to see that you know, our service reliability is continuing to trend in that upwards direction, and it's approaching that that you know 99-100% mark, which is very encouraging, good to see. The next slide, please. Lastly, and you know, again on this graph, which is a combination of the previous two, we can see that the reliability continues to increase, and service disruptions or service variability is decreasing, and that's that that green box that you see at the top right hand, that you know you want to see that above that the dotted line, which is 97%, you want to see it sort of narrow as narrow as possible. That indicates that you know, from day to day, the service is very reliable and less variable. When I talk about service disruptions or service variability, obviously I mean it's, you know, anything that's below 97% is you know, those can be challenging days for our customers. And you look at, there's fewer and fewer outliers. So using November as the example, you can see there's one dot below 97% there. And that's that occurrence where we had the deer on the tracks at Searville. So aside from that, you know, that's the one outlier that we have so far for the month of November. And we're seeing fewer and fewer of those. Again, an encouraging trend. Next slide, please. With regards to the rectification plan, work progresses on the items associated with the rectification plan. Overall, there's been significant progress made in resolving these issues, improving the service for our customers. As outlined at the October Transit Commission meeting, the work has largely been completed with regards to the brakes and the OCS, or overhead catenary system. RTG continues to monitor and investigate other fine-tuning of the vehicle brakes, the performance of the brakes. In addition, you know, with regards to the OCS, like all the rail systems, they're always going to be doing adjustments to it, especially when you have those change of seasons. So we're in the sort of the maintenance mode on those two items. With respect to the switch heaters, the work continues and RTG is on track to have all the switch heater upgrades completed for the beginning of December. And I'll provide a little more detail on this on the next slide. With regards to the vehicle traction power, the replacement of the inductors also continues to progress at this time. And we currently have 21 vehicles complete. And you know, if you recall the last Transit Commission meeting, it was 18. So work is progressing there. RTD does anticipate that this work will continue into the early next year. That's not new. But you know, overall, once again, we've been seeing positive impacts here, and we haven't seen a recurrence. With respect to the vehicle doors, again, we see the ongoing benefits of the updated software with very few door-related issues. And RTG has started to implement the additional improvements on the mechanical adjustments as well, just will further improve it. So real positive stuff on the vehicle doors, which, you know, in all rail systems is one of your number one cause of delays. And we've seen some real positive results there. The CVS units, there's nothing really new to report on that one. The upgraded software continues to yield positive results. But again, we need to monitor and for a long period of time to make sure that the desired results continue to be achieved. And then similarly, given the positive results over the summer regarding the HVAC system, we continue to be encouraged in that regard as well. Ongoing monitoring of the HVAC system will continue throughout the winter season and into next summer. And again, we need to make sure that the changes made and the improvements made continue through all four seasons and continue for an extended period of time. Overall, staff are continuing to monitor the performance on all these items. As I said, we need to see the reliability and the improvements last. We continue to provide oversight and monitor the performance of these things. As well, as mentioned at the last Transit Commission meeting as well, is that, our oversight and the work that's been done so far is going to be validated by the independent assessments that are currently being undertaken. And once again, I can't stress it enough. We know that the winter season is the most challenging. So we're spending a lot of effort making sure that the reliability continues during this time. That's something, our customers expect and deserve. Next slide, please. So I know I said I was going to talk a little bit more about switch heaters. So put together a little graph here to outline where the locations of the switch heaters and our current status. So as described at the October Transit Commission meeting, the switch heater locations are all being upgraded, which will help increase the functionality of switches during the winter season. As a reminder, there are three primary activities being undertaken to upgrade the switch heaters. The first, across the entire line, so all switch heaters, RTG has upgraded those switch heaters across the entire line to provide enhanced notifications and alerts the TOCC when a potential issue with a switch heater is experienced. And so the point here is we're going to get more advanced notification of a potential issue, and we can deploy staff to it to rectify the issue before it becomes a service impacting issue. So that's now in place across all the switch heater locations across the entire line. As a bit of a reminder, our TOCC is, staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So that's how, we want those advanced notifications, because then we can take some timely action. In the West End, and that's what you see denoted by the green check marks. In the West End, the switch heaters, those locations have been upgraded with improved electrical heaters and heat trace elements. So that work is complete. And in the East End, the work has commenced to upgrade the switch locations, all those switch locations east of Trombley Station, including Blair, with gas-powered heaters. This is anticipated to be completed in the coming weeks in the beginning of December. So in order to expedite and complete the work, we're going to be implementing some temporary service adjustments like we have in the past. We'll have our one replacement bus service running, but we have two planned temporary service closures on Sunday, November 22nd and Sunday, November 29th. We're doing it on these days where, ridership is lowest and it gives RTG the most amount of time to be able to get in there and get the work done and test it, commission it, ensure that they're reliable, and then we can get back to service Monday morning. A memo with those details will be shared with Council and Transit Commission shortly, and obviously we'll be communicating this out to our customers. In the interim, while this work is ongoing, RTG has implemented, you know, we mentioned it last time, additional mitigation measures, including glycol, that pretreatment liquid that, you know, helps prevent ice from forming, as well as having some additional field resources to be monitoring and checking. Next slide, please. With respect to the wheel cracks, RTG and Alstom have continued with their daily inspection regime of the wheels. These inspections are being undertaken concurrently to the, you know, and I know we said it before, but the independent TSB investigation. You know, the TSB investigation does continue, and, you know, it may continue for quite some time or for some additional time. And we have regular ongoing meetings, and we're continuing to cooperate with and provide whatever information they need in their investigation. While that is ongoing, Alstom continues to replace wheels of the vehicles across the fleet. To date, the work to replace the train wheels has been completed on non-vehicles, and the 10th is currently underway to be complete within the next year or two. Again, I believe I mentioned last Transit Commission meeting that the RTG anticipates that this work will continue into 2021. You know, and our goal is obviously to have it completed as soon as possible. You know, but on the positive note, as evidenced by the current positive trend in the service reliability, RTG has been able to provide 15 trains consistently during the morning peak period, and you know, are generally meeting our daily service requirements while continuing the wheel inspections. You know, so that's a positive. This is, you know, this the wheel crack inspections is the next piece of work they need to conduct, but you know, largely we're meeting our service expectations every single day. Had some challenges this morning, but you know, it's generally hasn't impacted our service, which is encouraging. And then last slide, please, or next slide. With regards to winter operations, you know, the winter season is upon us, and I just want to take some time to highlight some of the work that has been completed so far to prepare for the winter season. We've completed all our winter preparatory workshops with our partners. We have developed our operating plans for different types of weather events. You know, and that includes what actions we're going to take, what the staffing levels are going to be, you know, things like will trains run overnight, that sort of stuff. So all our winter operating plans have been reviewed, and they've all been updated based on the lessons learned and operational experiences over the last two winters. We've also initiated a weekly look ahead process where we, you know, all the necessary parties meet, look at what's forecast for the upcoming week, try to anticipate what the impacts could be, and, you know, redeploy staff, you know, take additional actions, those types of things, just all to try to be proactive and anticipate what those weather events can bring to us. So it's all about maintaining service reliability during a winter weather event or a storm. The vehicles are also undergoing their final winterization and preparations. The fleet is well underway, and with a few remaining vehicles to complete. At stations, salt bins, de-icer, snow melt products, and in addition to the winter equipment such as snowblowers and shovels, are all ready for use. Radiant heating in the passenger areas and platform heat trace elements are being checked and are continuing to be monitored by RTG. Outside the station, some customers may have noticed that snow fencing is in the progress of being installed along the line, just a few locations that RTG wants to get to install. That's well underway as well. And, you know, as I mentioned, one of the big pieces of work here is the switch heater upgrades and getting that done and getting it done for the beginning of December. RTG has secured additional resources for the winter season. And they have all their snow contractors are ready and on standby. And lastly, all the snow removal equipment that needs to go out on the line to clear out to clear the tracks, that has all been commissioned, tested, staff retrained and refreshed on you know, what they need to know. That's all been done, and you know, it's all ready for use. So just in closing on my piece here, you know, we know what the auto winter brings, and we know the challenges associated with it, with those weather events. So we're working closely with RTG to make sure that the plans and activities, you know, they're able to respond and be prepared for those things. So that's all the work that we're undergoing right now. I'll now turn things over to my colleague, Pat Scrimger, and he'll continue on with the presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Troy. The next slide, please. So I'll give you an update on where we are with ridership during this COVID period. Through September and October, we're now at 28% of the usual level of where we would be. That's a little bit lower than we were in September. likely as a result of the additional public health restrictions that were in place for 4 weeks. We're continuing to monitor that ridership. We'll see whether it changes during November, and we'll make any adjustments to our service that's needed to make sure that all customers have sufficient capacity. Next slide, please. This graph shows ridership from the day it started to decline at the beginning of March right up today. You can see that it hit a low point in April. It rose through June, July, August, and has been steady with a very short decline from September to October. The ups and downs you see there are mostly related to weekends and statutory holidays. Next slide, please. Coming up at the end of December, we have our winter schedule change. We'll have a new bus loop, a new temporary bus loop coming into place, coming into use at Lincoln Field Station to allow for stage two construction of the permanent station. We are still working with the constructor, EWC, to see if we can move that up a couple of weeks and get that done before the winter gets quite so deep. We've got some bus stop changes that are coming up, some improvements that we worked on with the community, with customers, and with the councillor through Blackburn Hamlet. We're expecting the major construction on Rideau Street between Seskus and Dalhousie to be complete. And so we expect on Sunday, December 20th, to be returning all of our downtown routes, which are currently on detour on Mackenzie King Bridge, back to Rideau Street for good connections with the O-Train at Rideau Station. There will still be some more of infrastructure services work to clean up in 2021, some of the top-level landscaping and things like that. Next slide, please. Some smaller changes coming with the December service change. The right turn from eastbound on Scott to south on Parkdale has been rebuilt, and this will allow buses to return to their regular route. They'd been on detour temporarily through Tunney's Pasture campus. Before that, we were operating on a residential street that was not proving satisfactory. So that's a change following up from some of the bus route changes that came in with O-Train Line 1 opening. Also, as development continues in the Greystone Village area just off Main Street in Old Ottawa East, routes 16 and 56 are being extended and adjusted to operate on the new streets in that community. A very small change in the south part of Kanata, as the morning trips on Route 64 will start on Acceptance Place, a new bus stop there, rather than on Meadow Breeze, where they have been starting. And we've got our regular holiday service adjustments coming up through the two-week period from before Christmas to New Year's. The next slide, please. As you know, as the chair mentioned at our last meeting, we've been rolling with our campaign to advise people that OC Transpo has signed on. And as you know, we were the first Canadian transit system to sign on to the American Public Transportation Association Health and Safety Commitments Program. So the sticker you see on the bottom right is now on all buses and trains, to remind customers that we're following industry best practices for customer health and safety. The next slide, please. The stickers you see here are also being applied to, or I believe are all applied now, to buses and trains. Again, reminding customers of the different safety measures that are in place, whether it's circulating fresh air, continuously cleaning touch points, and reminding people to wear their masks. And the sign on the right is the sign that we have on the fare gates at all O-Train stations, both reminding people on the way in that they should wear a mask and thanking people on their way out of the station for having worn their mask. Next slide, please. You'll remember that we ran Operation Mask Up for a two-week period in mid-October. The final results of that were that there were 48 customers who were turned away and denied access to the system for refusing to wear a mask. There were 10 customers who were fined for not wearing a mask. There were 602 customers who our special constables helped to adjust their masks so that they would understand how to wear them properly. Our special constables encountered 33 customers who were not wearing masks because of medical reasons. And there had been, before fines began to be issued on October 13th. And the days before that, there had been 25 written warnings issued. The next slide, please. So to this point, since the beginning of the pandemic, 44 of our staff members now, it was 43 when this was prepared. There was one more report yesterday. Out of 3,000 staff have reported a positive test for COVID-19. 40 of those staff members are recovered and back to work, and the others are continuing to self-isolate and recover, and we wish them the best. The next slide, please. Oh, and that is it. That's the end of the presentation. So we'll be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you all for this presentation. First up is Councillor Brockington.
Good morning, Chair and colleagues, and thank you, staff. Very good update. I just have a few questions. Mr. Charter, you briefly touched upon an independent assessment or analysis of the various fixes that are in place. Can you just elaborate who's doing the independent analysis? What's the depth and scope of this testing? How long does it take? Can you just provide us more details, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So it's an independent organization that we contracted to conduct the assessment. And, you know, essentially we provided them with, you know, all the information, all the data with regards to what's been impacting the service reliability in the line. And they've been given sort of carte blanche to look at everything and anything. So they have initially focused on the items that we've highlighted, the rectification plan items and RTG's action plan to address those. You know, they've asked for a lot of information, logs and work orders and those types of things. Because we've asked them, we want a holistic review. So yeah. Take a look at, is RTG, you know, are they doing the right things to rectify those issues? But if there's other things, you know, let us know. So they're going through a lot of detailed analysis of you know, plans and you know, they're looking at the actions that have been taken. You know, and then they've also been here as well. They've gone out and done some field exercises. They brought equipment in. We've talked about that, where they've gone out and measured track, and you know, so they're looking at everything. So it's a very, very broad scope, and you know, and I don't have a timeline for you. We've said to them, you know, we want to get this completed as soon as possible, obviously, but we want it to be thorough and we want it to be fulsome. So it's still ongoing at this time.
Fair enough. Okay, thank you. The switch heater matter. Let's just assume for a second, like snow is delayed. We've had a pretty good November so far, and I have no idea what December looks like. But let's assume the heaters, the switch matter is deemed fixed in December. Can this be tested overnight? We have cold temperatures overnight. Is there any way you can, you know, spray it with water, develop ice, take snow from hockey arenas, dump it on these switches, like really test it, try and get as close to winter conditions as possible to test these switches? It's one thing to test it and say it's done, but we really need to make sure it's effective in true winter conditions. So can you talk to me about how the fixed switches will be tested?
Okay, good question. So thank you for that. So yeah, I mean, there's a few things that we do to test the switches. One of the things that our control center do is every night they are over the night hours when trains aren't moving, they are moving the switches back and forth to make sure that they function the way they're intended. So that's not the switch heater per se, that's the switch. So we are moving those, and if they encounter anything, you know, we can dispatch staff over those overnight hours to take a look and rectify it. So that's something that we're doing as well. You know, with the alarming in the TOCC, you know, we now know if the heaters are functioning, if they're blowing sufficient heat. So the TOCC gets that alarm as well. But yeah, during the commissioning process in which you know, they're putting in these improved switch heaters, RTG is going through a variety of tests, and we will be following up with, you know, to your point, you know, what else can we do during the overnight hours. We will be doing some extra work there as well to we got to make sure they're robust and it functions as intended. So, you know, things like, you know, putting some snow on there, those are things that we'd be looking at doing, and we will be doing over the overnight engineering hours.
Excellent. Thank you. My final question, I'm not sure if Mr. Manconi has this or Mr. Scrimger, but that is the, if we're tracking the volume of cars back on the road, if Mr. Manconi, I think you have these stats because you've referenced car volumes in the past at a number of meetings, but if you're plotting monthly car volumes from March to October and you're following trends, and then we're looking at public transit ridership volumes as well, and you're trying to see whether or not there's a correlation between the two, or are people continuing to drive more and public transit less. Where am I getting at with this question is, if people feel that public transit is not safe, which I don't believe is the case, like I personally don't share that belief, but I do think there are people out there who are hesitant to take public transit, whether we as a commission need to go even further in our public outreach campaign communications to reinforce with people the extensive work we're doing about cleaning, our carriages are cleaned, PPP, the enforcement of PPE. So Mr. Manconi, your comments, please.
That's a great question, Commissioner. Two things to that. On the data correlation, we are doing exactly that. I've got Phil Landry, who has amazing data that he's populating right now. He started to do that early in the pandemic, too early to correlate trends. But Pat, Vivi, and Phil have exactly that mission that you've talked about. How are the trends looking, and when do we know if there's an actual trend or not? So it's still too early. We know, for example, on car trips, the trends are, I'll take the East as an example, more people are doing localized car trips rather than driving into town, which made total sense at the peak of the COVID pandemic because they were going to their grocery stores and so forth. So, but we're all over that exactly as you've described, but it's too early to do a direct correlation. On the informing the public, absolutely. That's why we've invested on the millions that you see in the budget on cleaning and disinfecting. The North American committees that I sat on at the CEO level, backed with data, said one thing that the customers are looking for: show us that it is safe to ride public transit. And I'll be very candid. Tons of communication is needed. That's why we're doing the stickers, the airflow communication, the cleaning, the videos. But it is, you can't force someone to believe that it's safe. It's their own personal decision. And so we need to consistently stay on top of that in terms of our marketing and our advertising and deliver on the cleanliness. And so yes, absolutely to all that, which is why we're doing what we're doing and why the very significant costs that you're seeing on cleaning, not just the vehicles, but also filtration systems, the stations, handrails, elevators, escalators, all that stuff.
And I think all commissioners have a responsibility to help communicate this through our various channels. Is there anything that you can provide me in addition to what you've already done to reinforce this message? Is there stuff you can share with me?
Yep, we will put together for all members of council the APTA program that we've got certification on. We'll also give Then there was in the connector tunnel in the yard, which connects the yard to out to the main line, there was a train that had a derailment. And then following that, there was a brake issue at U-Ottawa. And while we thought it was only a few minute delays across the system, it led up to about 20 minute delays on some trains. And that's where we failed to communicate. We didn't use our escalation internal processes. So the customers weren't informed, and that's the gap that we got to close on. In terms of the derailment, they've got to get the equipment in there. It's just one truck or one wheel. Again, I'll get Troy to comment on that. They'll just pull that train back onto the track probably later this evening and clear that up. We have redundancies in the yard, as you know, but the real concern on my front is we didn't communicate to our customers. Because the delay at the time wasn't significant. It was that 20-minute gap that we really missed the mark on. And it's all internal in terms of communication on our side. RTG has to respond to what happened on that train as it was being moved around in the yard out to the main line.
Thank you for recognizing that there was a bit of a communication hiccup, and it happens to the best of us. So I'm not going to give anyone flack over that for sure. You probably saw my eyebrows raise at the word derailment. That's a term when we're talking about trains that causes people's blood pressure to rise a little bit. So just so I understand, when we're talking about the connector tunnel, we're talking about, I personally call it the Thomas the Tank Engine tunnel, the one that goes from the yard and it comes out between Saint-Laurent and Tremblay, correct? That's the sort of the little secret
correct.
Tunnel?
Correct.
Okay. I might be the only one that calls it the Thomas the Tank Engine tunnel. What caused the derailment? Do we know?
Too early to tell. That's what the safety team looks at. Derailments in yards are, I use this term in a, and I'm not trying to diminish it at all, are common across North America. We take the position that we treat them very seriously. We report them to TSB, so it's all on record. And TSB, I know that our chief safety officer has a very good relationship with them. Some agencies take the position that if it's in the yard, it's just normal maintenance. It's like getting a vehicle stuck on, a plow getting stuck in your yard and so forth. We take it as report every one of those and look at them because we look for trends. And we've had a number of these in the yard. And I know when we had the first one, there was a lot of press coverage on it and so forth. One of the rectifications that RTG has is we want those derailments in the yards to be virtually zero. And generally why they happen sometimes is there's a lot of curves there. There's different ballast that's used in the track and everything. Those are reasons, but what you want to strive for is zero derailments across the entire system, whether it's in the yard or out on the main line. And a derailment on the main line would be very problematic. We have not had any of those on the LRT line, and so it's all being investigated. It gets documented, and there is an action plan that RTG needs to minimize the ones in the yard. I don't know exactly how many we've had, but we've had it's less than 10, but there's been a number of them.
And just to clarify, you keep saying that the derailment happened in the yard. The Belfast yard, I think, is what it's called. I could be wrong, but this actually happened in the connector tunnel. So it was on the line, not the main line, but the connector line.
No, Commissioner, there is a delineation, very strict protocols from a safety perspective and a definition on the line where the rail line and the yard operations are delineated. Okay. That is very, very specific. Okay. Because there's what's called rail book rules that need to be followed in the yard that are different than the main line. So there's an actual physical delineation of where the yard ends and where the main line begins. That's all prescribed in our safety protocols.
That's important. Thank you. I'm glad that you clarified that because to me, it was all line. So thank you. With respect to the wheel replacements, what's the expected completion date for the wheel replacements?
Troy?
Good question. Right now, we are anticipating towards the end of Q1 of next year. But we've been talking to RTG about the fact that we need to expedite that. And they are looking at ways to, have a secondary location where they can get to these wheels and do them more quicker. So right now, it's, that towards the end of Q1 timeframe, but we're expecting that they can expedite that. And we're expecting that they will.
Just for the lay people who may be possibly watching this, end of Q1 means March 31st.
Yeah, by the end, yeah, correct. Okay. By the end of March time frame. But as I said, we're seeking to expedite that, and we expect that it will be.
Okay, perfect. I just wanted to clarify that because in the government, the end of Q1 is in the summer, so the federal government. So I just wanted to. I get confused between the two levels of government. So the stickers that we've installed on buses and trains about the airflow and the air exchange and safety measures, how much did those cost to procure and install?
Pat?
Those were produced in-house, and they cost about $4,000.
Excellent. Excellent. That is both surprising and pleasing. So thank you for that answer. And my last question is, so you mentioned off the top that there are now 44 staff members of the over 3,000, I believe, that have contracted COVID-19. I'm glad to hear that the vast majority of them have recovered and have returned to work. And I send my best wishes to the three who are still recovering. How many of those, I assume that contact tracing has been done, how many of those can contact trace their contraction of the virus back to the workplace?
So I'm going to be cautious about that. I don't know the rules. I know Dr. Etches has been very prescriptive on what we can share and cannot share.
That's fair.
Commissioner.
That's fair.
If you like, I can go back and ask. I don't want to get into the specifics. What I will say is this, that we're not seeing any active transmission on the system itself.
Okay. And that's fair. I don't want you to violate any, it was more of interest, but no, I don't want you to violate any privacy rules or
Thank
make
you.
Dr. Etches mad. So, feel free to shoot me an email or call me at some point, but it's not a high priority. So please don't spend too much of your day on it.
Thank you.
Those are my questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you all.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next up is Vice Chair Cloutier, please.
Thank you very much, Chair. Merci beaucoup, Monsieur Manconi, Monsieur Charter, Monsieur Grimger. Just a note on just following up on what Councillor Commissioner Wright Gilbert said. $4,000, is that to produce or is that to produce and install for those information stickers for our customers?
Mr. Chair, that was the cost to produce the stickers. The installation on OC Transpo maintained equipment was done by people in their normal work hours, so no additional cost was incurred. There may have been some additional time that we will have to pay RTG for the installation on the trains.
Okay. And has the entire fleet, buses and trains, everything has been done?
I believe so. There may be some buses that have been out of service for a few weeks, having more work done where they haven't been done, but okay. Largely, yes.
Everything that's on the system. Okay, thank you. Just follow-up question with respect to the information that the general manager provided us this morning. As far as you know, with respect to the disruption this morning, how would today rate? Would it rate a 98%? Would it rate lower? How would that, just trying to relate that to the impact on our customers?
Troy, rough math or over to you.
Yeah, thank you. Right now, just sort of thinking about it. So, two less trains during our morning peak period for a couple hours. If the rest of the day goes without any issue or disruption, you're probably hovering around 97%, maybe either a little bit above or a little bit below. It's around there. So, that problematic time was the when we had to pull that one train that was out in service, and that caused the ripple effect to the other trains. But I think you're probably right around that 97%.
Okay. And I'm just relating that to the experience of our customer, a commuter that depends on the train, a 20-minute delay, as the general manager said. We get a score of 97, but that commuter is seriously impacted. And I recognize we are running a system for hundreds of thousands of users. So thank you. I just wanted to reconcile that for myself. On slide, and I was on the system this morning, and I was not impacted, but I recognize and I appreciate the information that other customers were.
Vice Chair, can I just say something? Because, if you hear my tense about my tone today that I'm not happy, it's because I'm not happy, because the view we take is one customer impacted is one too many. But what I want to square up is I saw some of the body language, well, 97%, and, yet people could have been stuck on a train for 20 minutes. Your point is exactly bang on, Vice Chair. You got to look at it system-wide. There were some people that were not impacted at all. But I just want Commission to know we don't minimize this at all. Our goal is 100%. And I just want to push that very, very hard. Because if you were that customer that, under 5 minutes, we can understand. Anything over 5 minutes in delay, we take very, very seriously. So I don't want to minimize that at all, that 97 is good. We're going for 100. I just want to be clear on that.
I absolutely acknowledge that. when I am on the system and I am trying to get to an appointment, if there's a delay, that has a big impact on my day. And I recognize that for a parent that is going back to daycare or to their employment, a frontline worker that wants to get to the hospital for their work. And I appreciate that you've said that. I appreciate that we want to look at after each individual customer and provide the best transit experience that we want. So I thank you for that and that intervention, and I support you 100% on that. There was slide number 17 with respect to the mask up operation, October 9th to 23rd. What are the current efforts? This morning, I saw 100% compliance on the LRT, and I appreciate that. And I did see those signs up, those stickers. What are the current efforts? Is Operation Mask Up continuing with respect to providing information, enforcement when required, so that we continue our efforts to keep our staff and our customers safe? What is the current status of Operation Mask Up?
So the efforts are exactly what you just outlined. Lots of information there. We've got more signage going up. We are going to do additional blitzes. I think it's going to be a mix of random and also public announceable blitzes. The team's been tasked with coming back with a plan. We're in the mask business for foreseeable future. We're doing very, very well. We have data we've been collecting by routes. We're over 99% compliance is what we're seeing on some routes. We're at 100 in other areas, and we just want to keep that up. So we're not, the message is we are going to be back out there again in different shapes and different forms doing blitzes.
Okay. Thank you. It's very important that we continue to emphasize that it continues to be important for OC Transpo, for other riders, that everyone participate, that everyone recognize the necessity of personal protection equipment and keeping everyone safe. Just one more question, and it goes back to the switch heaters. Thank you for the graphic, the slide. I didn't note the number where the electrical switch heaters are and the gas switch heaters. The electrical ones, and you referred to it, I think it was Mr. Charter, in the West End, that is not a change from the from last winter, is it? It was electrical. It continues to be electrical.
Good question, Mr. Chair. That is correct. They were electrical last year. They continue to be electrical, but we've improved the electrical heater elements there, as well as added heat trace and the alarming. And if you recall, I think it was two Transit Commission meetings ago, I mentioned that all but one disservice disruption that was related to switches and switch heaters occurred in the East End, not the West End.
Indeed, and that's in the East End, what you're referring to is the East End between Herdman and Saint-Laurent. There is a lot of switches there at Tremblay Station, as Commissioner Wright Gilbert referred to, the entrance, the tunnel to Belfast Yard that goes under the VIA track in my ward adjacent to Belfast. There is an awful lot of switch heaters there. And so the fact that they are gas now, that is a change from operations last winter. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes. Yeah. So the ones east of Tremblay, there is one says switch heaters east of Herdman, but west of that would still be electrical, but east of Tremblay, those three locations are now gas. Are being converted to gas.
Okay. And customers can expect an improvement on performance there, in the fact that you are enhancing monitoring, and you referred to it as alarming. Is that correct?
Yeah, and that is correct. And you know, I should have mentioned, because you know, I think in my head it goes without saying, but I should say it. You know, this is in addition to whenever we have the weather event. You know, you're never going to get away from having field staff boots on the ground. You know, Mr. Manconi refers to boots on the ground. You're never going to get away from having field staff out there. So when we have weather events, there will also be enhanced staffing. That's part of our winter operating plans, is we will have extra staff out there to attend to whatever issue that may occur, and just to keep the system moving.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation, Chair. Those were all the questions I had.
Thank you, Vice Chair Cloutier. Next up, Commissioner Caricato, please.
Thanks, Chair. How is everyone today? Following up on your, actually, Councillor Brockington's final point about all of us encouraging our networks to consider getting back on the bus and the train and highlight the safety aspects of it, I hope conversations are happening with Dr. Etches and Ottawa Public Health as well, since, you know, everybody's listening to them these days and less us. But anyways, that would be a kind suggestion. Another comment concerning the memo we got in some areas concerning the seven, I guess, reoccurring issues on Confed Line 1. On some of them, you have dates of completion and others you don't. And that just kind of leads to more questions. I think Sarah brought up a few of them. So if in future reports it is possible to put a date of completion or even an expected or a hopeful date, that would provide clarity. And then finally, I only have one question. Something I've asked a few times now and emailed with you, Pat, on it about outside signage at our LRT station so that riders can see before going down and paying whether or not the train is running on time and how often. You guys said you were going to look into it and see what the possibilities were. Wondering if you have an update for us on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's something we continue to work on. They're not in place yet, but we're working on exactly how to do that. And I'll be able to provide more information when we have a firm project with some dates.
So it is going to happen.
We're working that direction. I don't want to confirm it before we can confirm it technically, but that's what we're working towards.
Okay, thanks. That's all my questions.
I think Commissioner Caricato, that was a really good example of how come it's hard to put dates to every item, because sometimes we don't know if something's going to be possible yet. There's all kinds of issues about, in this case, putting a sign up, in certain areas and so on. So your point's well taken, that if we know a date or we have a hopeful date, we should probably put that out there as a guideline, but it's not always possible. And I think that needs to be recognized. Next up is Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Manconi, I have just a couple of questions for you. It's with respect to Operation Mask Up, and it's following on the questions of the Vice Chair, Mr. Cloutier. And did you say that the enforcement would continue, i.e. that ticketing of people would continue?
That's correct.
Okay. You also said that you had found 99% compliance, mask compliance. Is that correct?
Yes, we've been doing checks across the system on buses and rail, and we've had high 90s compliance on masks. This is actually looking at the passengers on the buses and extracting those that weren't.
Okay. And what is the cost of Operation Mask Up?
We're rolling up all those costs right now because we put dedicated teams on them, and we did full coverage, even evening hours and so forth. So there was overtime costs and so forth. I don't have those right now, but I am getting that from the team.
Okay. Because there's an economic concept of diminishing marginal returns. So to go from 0 to 10, it costs you a little bit less. But to go from 99 to 100, you know, it costs you much more to get that last 1%. Is it really cost effective to continue this, knowing that we're at 99%, or as you said, I think in some areas 100%?
My view is yes, and I'll tell you why. The polls that CUTA and APTA and others have done, and this speaks to the earlier comments of other commissioners, customers have said, there are some customers that have said, we are not going to ride transit until there's a vaccine, until things settle down. You know, there's a myriad of issues that some will cite. Some are very, very comfortable riding now, and some have no choice. And, you know, we'll speak about that in the budget in terms of the equity inclusion lens. To me, the investment on the mask is part of the bigger investment in ensuring public health and and building that confidence to get customers back to the system. If we let it's you know, it's kind of like the ride program. If you stop doing blitzes on drinking and driving, you know, it could creep back in into you, into society. And we don't want that to occur. So the message is loud and clear. There's heavy fines. We have very big fines. It's about taking care of others. And it's about the bigger play in terms of recovery from transit, economic, all those pieces. And if we don't keep the blitzes up, it may not be as intense as what we're doing right now. It just could be random blitzes at lower cost. But to me, if word gets out that we're not enforcing the rules, and you saw how many people we had to adjust, you saw how many people we ejected from the system, I think that will work contrary to building that confidence that others are expecting. I can tell you that I've spoken to customers that felt very uncomfortable, even on a bus that wasn't full, with someone not wearing a mask. And I got to take care of our operators and our staff also that are out there risking their lives every single day. So to me, it's an investment on the bigger play. There are diminishing returns, but I think it's part of the bigger piece. And we are, to Commissioner Catacato's comment, we are absolutely joined at the hips with Dr. Etch's team. Right from the get-go, we wanted to know if transit was a contributor to the pandemic. It is not up until now. And it's all the sum of those parts about rebuilding that confidence.
Okay. Mr. Manconi, thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, that's all my questions.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Olson. Councillor Fleury, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for the update, John and team. My question relates back to, we had an email exchange early in the back to school period relating to the UPass, and I appreciate at the time you weren't able to provide the data. Would you be able to share with us ultimately how many UPasses from our college and university were I guess selected were are in play?
Pat.
Yeah, yes, we will be able to do that. We'll have numbers now for the summer term, and we will have numbers for the current fall term by mid to late January, so we'd be able to share them at that time. We have each of the four institutions has slightly different arrangements between the institution and the students for how they're administering UPass changes.
Okay, I appreciate that. And yeah, if you could send my way, just from curiosity, in terms of the ridership that you've described in your presentation, could you give us a deeper snapshot of past usage? Like, have we seen particular groups that have dropped off, for example, the adult pass versus the seniors pass? Like, when you look at the overall trend of ridership and the drop due to COVID, have you seen a particular uptake for certain pass users and complete drop off for others?
I would say we're seeing the greatest decrease in ridership among those people who would normally be traveling to work in offices or to school at universities and colleges. We're seeing less of a reduction in ridership among those people who are going to work in services such as retail and hospitals. I don't have the numbers at hand on how the pass sales or individual ride fares have varied, but I think generally speaking, we are seeing that the people who are still working and still are still working at work, and the people who still need to use transit to get there are still riding transit in greater number than those people who have the option of working from home.
So would that be fair to extrapolate adult pass and community pass remain relatively high within the drop of COVID usage?
I would say that the the different groups that we see are not distinguished by the so much by the type of fare they pay as the nature of their own personal situation, where they where they work, what their type of work is, and what their own situation is.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Fleury. Mr. Manconi, I just want to come back to the this morning's derailment just to get some clarification here. Did you say it was one or two wheels that came off the track?
Troy, do you know the number?
Yeah, it was good question, Mr. Chair. It was one axle, so two wheels, but one axle.
And just refresh my memory, how many wheels and axles do we have on the stream?
I believe it's 7 per train, so 14 in total. I can just double check. I'll double check that, but it's something like that.
Okay. So it's a term, a technical term, I guess, to call this a derailment because one wheel came off. What I'd like to hear a little more about for the benefit of the public is one wheel coming off a track doesn't mean the train's about to flip over on its back or anything like that. The train can't proceed until we get that wheel back on. So it's not a nothing issue. It's still an issue that we have to deal with. But the safety of our riders are not at risk when one wheel slips off the track. Is that correct?
So a couple of things, Chair. There's a bunch of safety features that immediately kick in, whether it's one truck, one wheel, one set of wheels, and so forth. There's no damage to the train, no injuries that were reported this morning so far. We'll inspect the vehicle, obviously, once they put it back on the track. Absolutely, there's a bunch of protocols that get followed. The thing that we need to remember is we have a chief safety officer, and the first question he asks on any incident, minor or major, is there any reason to stop the service? There's two people that have authority to stop the service. Is he can recommend it to me, and I can stop the service if I have any concerns. And I'll tell you, that is the first thing that gets asked on any incident. And you see Brandon on the screen there. He's the chief safety officer, for those of you that don't know him. So that's an established position under our safety protocol. It was part of the federal government downloading the self-regulatory environment to ourselves.
Okay, thank you for those answers. So that concludes the update on this presentation.